everybody. I'm Aaron Martell.
Shannon Fleming.
And I'm Ray Zimmer.
And welcome to the R4 Summit, a podcast where we discuss and analyze a musical album of our choice. On this episode, we have two regular guest co-pilots joining us for a roundtable discussion on the podcast. First up is the professor, Ray Permy. Ray P., welcome back to the summit.
Well, thank you. I feel like I should have like a heavyweight like robe on and some doing some jumping jacks.
Yeah.
Shadow boxing.
Also joining us is none other than super listener Sam George. Sam, great to have you back on once again.
Thanks, man. It's a pleasure. And it's nice to meet you, Ray. Ray P., professor. I'm going to have to call you professor, man.
You
I'm a big fan, man. I love all your episodes.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks.
Especially the Rolling Stones, man. I was schooled, so to speak. That was great.
Oh, yeah. We all got schooled.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate this.
Of course.
Definitely.
So on this episode, we are going to delve into Pink Floyd's 1977 album, Animals. Ray P., you're up first. What's your history with Pink Floyd and this particular album?
Okay. My older brother had this album, and it's kind of when he went through his drug phase, I guess. I remember this one and staring at this album cover and this the other one with Steve Miller with the jet airliner, the brown one.
Yep.
Because the only Steve Miller I have is Greatest Hits. That's it. I remember he had this, and he had Wish You Were Here, and he had Dark Side of the Moon, and they were really kind of, this is very atmospheric and kind of like ambient noises to me for most of the time. But when The Wall came out, of course, you couldn't get away from it. I was in junior high school when that came out. So, and you know, We Don't Need No Education became the anthem for the class of 84. And that's when I kind of went back and started listening to, I listened to Dark Side of the Moon, and I listened to this one, and I always liked this one more than the rest of them. That's my history with it.
All right. Sam, how about you?
I grew up with this stuff, man. My dad's record collection had all kinds of cool music in it, and I heard it. I mean, I remember hearing this when I was Dark Side of the Moon when I was very, very young, like diapers. And dad would have some people over, and they would blast it on his Radio Shack stereo. Well, at first he had one of those box things with the record player in it, had the speakers in the bottom. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Killer setup.
And he had a ton of records, and he would set them all out. And anyways, so I grew up with it. Later on, when I got to be a teenager, I got my own stereo with a record player so I could play dad's records, and he gave them to me, you know, when I bought that. And so I was looking through, and I was always loved Pink Floyd, but Animals was one of the cleanest ones. You know, you pull it out, it still wasn't played that much, you know, so it's all pretty and stuff. And so I played the shit out of it, and I wore it out. I locked myself in my room, man, and tried to play this album when I was 15. And still learning.
Can you play the chord to Dogs?
Yes.
Oh, cool. Very cool. I love that chord progression, but I'll get into that
later.
That's
weird, right? Yeah, we'll get into that. That's cool.
Yeah.
Shannon, how about you?
Pretty much like what Sam said, except with the exception that I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Aaron, Dad had Dark Side of the Moon.
He did?
I think he did.
I don't remember that.
See, I seem to remember hearing it. I remember seeing the album cover with a prism.
Really?
So that's my early memory of it. So maybe it wasn't Dad. Maybe it was maybe Uncle Jim or somebody else. I don't know. I remember hearing it. I was little.
Hmm.
So in terms of that, I have a limited history in their catalog. And up to this album, I've known The Wall. I know Dark Side of the Moon. And that's about it. And I know very little about the band itself. As a result of this album, I really delved into it a bit. Not the discography per se, but just like, you know, all the elements put into this album. Anyway, going back to what you were asking. So like every other, you know, high school kid, Pink Floyd was, I don't know, they had a resurgence after Momentary Lapse of Reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's where the 87 album, when they, you know, after Waters and Gilmore split, they had that, it was a huge success. And I think that kind of took off for, you know, our generation, and it all of a sudden, like The Wall was being played, songs from that, and so that's basically how I know them, and that's about it up until now.
All right, Ray Z.
Those are one. Pink Floyd's one of those bands that kind of like popped up intermittently in my life. Of course, I was in kindergarten when The Wall was released, and I remember my dad loved Another Brick in the Wall part whatever. I can never keep track
of part two.
Yeah. I think it's part two.
Part two, yeah. And he would just like blast that on whenever it came on 92 Pro FM out of Providence, Rhode Island. That's right. With Casey Kasem doing the American Top 40. End of quote. But then, you know, I was listening to like a lot of pop and top 40 stuff. But then kind of like Shannon said, like when Momentary Lapse of Reason came out, I remember hearing I'm Turning Away. And that got me into them. I got that album for Christmas of like 1988. And then, you know, I had a couple handful of songs that I liked off of classic rock radio that were pretty awesome. I think my brother had a collection of great dance songs, which is a pretty good greatest hits package as far as like greatest hits packages goes. But it wasn't until like I think it was my senior year at UMass, my roommate John Archambault was like a huge like Syd Barrett fan, and he played me like of course the first album, Piper at the Gates of Dawn, and then he played Saucer Full of Secrets. Saucer Full of Secrets is still like my one of my favorites of their entire catalog, and plus the Syd solo stuff I like too in its own damaged broken way. But with this album in particular, I only discovered last year. That's my history with Animals anyway.
Okay, it took me forever to get into this band. For the better part of 40 years, there were two bands of major stature I just did not get and did not care for. One is the Grateful Dead, and I still don't get it with them. And the other is Pink Floyd. I always dismissed the Floyd as a synthy, drugged-out band that you had to be really high to appreciate, and as I had no interest in hippie or druggy culture, that stereotype did not appeal to me. I had friends who loved them. Quick shout-out to Dave Spiela. I bet you're not listening, dude. And how often did you try to tell me I'd like them, Shannon? Shit.
All the time.
Yes.
And the Grateful Dead, just for the record.
Yeah, well, fuck them. Of course, I knew the 10 or 15 Floyd songs in regular rotation on the radio. You know, Money, Time, Another Brick in the Wall, Wish You Were Here, Comfortably Numb. You know, they were okay. I like those songs, but fuck that boring, druggy shit. Ain't no way I'm listening to them. Then sometime after I turned 40, so like within the last 10 years, there was a sale of Pink Floyd CDs at the local Best Buy or some shit like that. So I don't know what possessed me that day, but I said, nah, all right, I'll give them a shot. I bought the album that had the most songs on it that I knew, which was The Wall. I took it home, really listened to it the way I listened to prepare for the podcast, and lo and behold, I dug it. Holy shit. I slowly bought more Pink Floyd albums over the following years, and I got Animals maybe 3 or 4 years ago because I knew it was popular among the Floyd fan base, even though I didn't know any of the tracks on it at all. And there it is.
Well, that's cool. You gave him a shot.
I told you.
Yeah.
I told you.
I did.
So here are some basic facts about this record, straight to you from your friends at Wikipedia. Animals is the 10th studio album by English rock band Pink Floyd, released on January 21st, 1977 in the UK, and on February 12th, 1977 in the US through Harvest and Columbia Records. It was produced by Pink Floyd and was recorded from April to December 1976 at Britannia Row Studios, London, England. It reached number 2 on the UK Albums Chart and number 3 on the US Billboard 200 chart, and is certified gold by the BPI and 4x platinum by the RIAA. Now I'll give you the band's lineup card. We have David Gilmour on vocals, lead guitar, bass guitar, acoustic guitar, and talk box. Roger Waters on lead vocals, harmony vocals, acoustic guitar, rhythm guitar, tape effects, vocoder, and bass guitar. Nick Mason on drums, percussion, and tape effects. And Richard Wright on Hammond organ, Farfisa organ, EMS VCS3, electric piano, mini Moog, ARP string synthesizer, grand piano, clarinet, and harmony vocals.
He's the man.
Wow, yeah,
man.
He's awesome.
And now here we go into a track-by-track analysis of the album. The first track is Pigs on the Wing, Part 1, written by Roger Waters.
If you didn't care, what happened to me? and I didn't care. But you, we would zigzag away.
Professor, school us.
Okay, Pigs on the Wing is kind of a mystery to a lot of people. It's from a Lewis Carroll, well, the Walrus and Carpenter poem is where the first phrase shows up in the literary area. However, it is a more of a World War I pilot's expression for having an enemy in your blind spot, although Roger's father was a World War II pilot that was killed in action. I think that's probably where it comes from. So it's about somebody in your blind, a danger in your blind spot. Whatever its origins are, it is supposed to be a love song to his first wife, Carolyn, whom he later divorced. She was the first woman who was able to go toe-to-toe intellectually with Roger and give as good as she got with him, which I'm sure was probably great.
Yeah, he's an asshole.
Yeah, like on the highest order. A lot of people, a lot of the reviews I read that these were bookends. This, the part one and part two were bookends to this album. And bookends kind of, that doesn't sit right with me because it almost seems like they were unintended and just kind of happenstance and really not thematically attached to these other songs or the whole concept. And I don't see that to be true. I view them more as an introduction to the theme. The whole album, to me, seems like Roger's explaining to his wife who he is, what his view of the world is, and how he fits into that view, and what ultimately he hopes will happen. That's kind of where I get off on these albums. So it's just kind of a stupid little ditty. That's it. But it does make sense to me when I put it in that kind of context.
All right. Sam?
I can't follow that. No, I mean, it's good. I mean, I love listening to your voice, man. I could just sleep on the pillows. It was awesome. Anyways.
Man crush alert.
Yeah. Don't send me any pictures.
I think, yeah, I'd heard that this was a sweet song to his girlfriend. I didn't get all of that like Professor did. But to me, as far as the tracks on the album, there and this one stinks to me. That's all.
All right. Laying it down.
Yeah, right on. Short, sweet, to the point.
Shannon, what do you say?
I say I disagree with both. I do agree it's a very pretty little tune. It is very reminiscent. Well, I picked up pieces of Wish You Were Here. And, of course, what Ray and I were joking at the beginning about Mother, that's coming later. You can totally hear that within the song. But what my take on this is this is a synopsis of what's to come, of the political uprising. The pigs are coming, which are the overlords. And it's basically talking about, you know, what to expect, what's coming down the pike. And that's what opens this album. And it's brilliant. I think the lyrics are brilliant because it really gives you a quick summary of it's basically like it is. It's a summary of the entire album. And then the conclusion coming at the end. But we'll cross over that bridge when we get to it. But something that really cracked me up when I was listening to it, because I immediately picked up the George Orwell Animal Farm thing. And it's true. It is loosely based on that. But I mean, just looking at the actual, you know, track titles, you can see it. And it does fall in line with that. But what was so funny is when I first started listening to it, I thought he was singing, "If You Were a Cat." And I'm like, "If you were a cat, if you were a cat." And I'm like, okay. So I'm immediately thinking, well, okay, so the dogs are coming next, so this cat's really got to be scared or something like that. And what he's actually singing is, "If you ever cared."
And I'm like, oh, man, I'm the dogs are after the cat.
I'm like having one of those moments where it's like I'm listening to, like, you know, either like Mick Jagger or like Stevie Nicks or something like that. I have no idea what he's singing. But I finally, like, I understand what the album's about, but I go back and listen to it. I'm like, oh, that's what it is. He's not a cat. He cared. But maybe he's a cat, too.
She swallowed the dog to catch the cat.
But the warning is clear. The pigs are coming. That's what my take is.
Ray Z.
And doesn't it make you feel better? No. Oh, sorry. I had to go there for a second. But Yeah, no, I like Shannon mentioned, and I definitely picked up on this. It's kind of like a precursor to Mother. And you know, as far as like the bookending thing, I guess you could be in some ways it could be looked as kind of like a cheap device for like a concept. But also composers do that well too. Like they'll have their main theme, they'll expand upon the theme. In this case, they expand the shit out of the theme, and then they come back to the end. So I don't so much mind it, but yeah, I kind of dig that aspect of the song. This, I think, is one of Waters' best vocal performances. This one and the last one, I think that as far as his vocal performance of this entire album, these two are the high points.
All right. Well, in my opinion, the album is bookended by what amounts to Roger Waters strumming an acoustic guitar and singing like a 60s era folk singer. And I also read that it was a love song directed at his new wife at the time, but I don't know about that either. I don't really think that's not what I pick up, at least in this part one. This record is a concept album that critiques societal classes and power structures and labels the main groups as a type of animal, as we'll see when we get to the meat of the album. To me, it seems that Roger's saying that people should care about each other, because if they didn't, who would give a fuck about anything and would just try to place blame on one of these groups of people for society's ills, whichever of the buggers is to blame. Roger's voice is plaintive and almost hopeful, which it won't be very soon, and I really dig this as an intro. I really do. I don't think it's a throwaway.
I'm shocked.
It's not a throwaway track at all.
Are you kidding me?
Well, I'm hearing some cowboy talk. I'm hearing some cowboy talk.
I think it's integral based on the lyrics alone.
I got to rethink my whole plan.
You can't turn back now, buddy. This is going to be awesome.
Yes, it is.
The next track is Dogs, written by David Gilmour and Roger Waters. Ray P., what do you think?
Okay, geez. 17 minutes plus. When I hear the first verse of this song, the first thing I think of is, like, I just walked into some hotel lobby, and off on the conference room, they have a Welcome to Waters and Gilmour Management Training and How to Excel as a Middle Manager Symposium.
That's awesome.
Right?
It's just name tags?
Right? Hello, just, my name is David.
I'm Bob from Midwest Division.
It is just this bitter, soulless, bile-filled venting of the spleen with all of the world's pernicious consequences that await you, should you choose this life path, all set to a rich sonic scape. Roger actually calls himself a dog in Pigs on the Wing Part 2. So going back to the theme of he's telling his wife who he is and kind of how he got there and what his worldview is this very misanthropic worldview. It was originally titled You Got to Be Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It was a David Gilmour composition from 74. According to Gilmour, the song title was changed midway through the recording of Animals, either when Waters' concept for the album became fully formed or he was able to adequately articulate this to his bandmates. This is what Gilmour said. It's a good thing in the end having to a collective decision, though it knocks out some of the excess which might otherwise appear from us as individuals. So they were able to knock off some excess after 17 minutes. Thank God.
So, that's really interesting background. Oh.
The ominous organ swells, courtesy of Mr. Rick Wright. They add a tension, like an energy that is trying to be released, a type of volcanic pressure. Something is just below the surface and is about to burst open. And then they come into that lyric that ends with, you've got to put the knife in. And that guitar solo, it all makes sense how he kind of goes through this change of this is what it means to be this kind of person. And then how you sustain this kind of life and the cost of it, dying alone of cancer. Musically, the music falls into the abyss, letting the protagonist, which is Waters, letting all that sink into him. kind of realizing what he's become and what awaits him. I just like how right after the second solo, with the dogs barking, and it's that really harsh solo. It's kind of like the protagonist gets clarity, and he comes to his own sort of coping mechanism with who he's become and how he can live this life, knowing that he still thinks everybody's a killer.
Sam, what do you think?
I love the song, man. First off, it comes off with these really cool chords to me, and they are very cool chords. I want to talk to Ray about this, man. It took me, when I was trying to learn it, this whole song brings me back to when I was 15 years old, by the way, because I literally locked myself in my room and was trying to play like David Gilmour. And this song terrified me. It frustrated me. But I learned to love it because of that, because when I finally did learn how to play it, I had to go get some lessons, by the way.
I can imagine, yeah.
Man, it was so satisfying, right? And I could play the shit out of this song. And I love everything about it, man. The lyrics, Roger Waters' lyrics on this album, I think that's his strong point. You know, overall, his overall strong point to me is his words. And these words are great to me.
Agreed.
Especially at the end of the song. I'll get in that in a minute. But, you know, it starts off, you got to be crazy. You know, it's like, it's already starting a conversation. It's like, you got to be crazy, you asshole. You got to have a real need. You got to sleep on your toes when you're on your feet. And these lyrics, you know, when he's got to be able to pick out the easy meat with your eyes closed, it's because he's a dog, right? And he's in a pack, and he's hunting, and he's hungry, and he's got to kill. There he is. There's the dog.
Yeah, that is my dog.
If his name is Seamus, that'll make things even better, man.
Seamus?
He's Wilson.
You're right. Anyway, and this whole song, man, and it kind of flows into different parts of the song. It goes into a kind of a trippy thing, and after the firm handshake verse, and it goes, it's going to get harder and harder and harder as you get older, and it's really awesome. And this goes into this really cool synth solo, and it's got a call and response bluesy synth thing going. It's really cool, but it's really dark at the same time. It's not a happy song at all. It's so dark, and you got these synthetic dogs barking. And then David comes with this badass solo when he plays it angry. It's that part where he goes, that part, that just blows my fucking mind to this day. Awesome. I love playing it because you can just make it just madder than hell the way he plays it, man. He's pissed off. And it's probably because he's in the same room with Roger Waters.
That'd be funny if it wasn't true.
I know.
Right. No, Roger's a well-known asshole and he admits it. Especially then, back in those days, he's calmed down a little bit. If he just showed it, I don't want to get into him. Anyway, and it gets to another solo, and to another verse. It was kind of slows down and bluesy thing. It's got some space in it, some air, and then dun 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 with the Rick Wright is playing that stuff, and the same with an acoustic guitar sounds like, I believe. And he goes, and then when you lose control. I've heard that part of the song was kind of lifted off of Joe Walsh's Turn to Stone. What do you guys think about that? Real quick.
I'm not familiar with that song.
I didn't think about that, but
I'll have to look into that.
I sent it to you last night, Aaron.
You did? Yeah, no, and I knew the song, but yeah, now I get it. Now, yes, I do now.
When did that one come out?
Now that I think about it.
74. 70,
yeah.
74?
Okay. Right, the album is So What?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, okay.
That's pretty funny. So what? Yeah. What do you mean?
Right.
The album is So What?
It's my hand is very far extending. People don't realize how far his hand, his influence goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds pretty close to it, and I love Joe Walsh too, so I'm not going to hate him for it. And I like this part too. You can tell that all the delay on the album, the guitars and production was all analog, man. It fades out. There's no digital delay on this record, I don't think. If there was, then Pink Floyd would be the first ones to use it because they always had were on top of the newest things, and they would use them and play with them and see how they sounded and stuff. Anyways, later on the song, you get the synthesizer dogs again, bark, bark, woof, woof, howl. You get that. I really like that part, though, when the key changes and you hear him whistling for the dog.
I love that part. Yep.
And then the chord changes, and you go, and that's so fucking awesome. I love that part, man. And then it fades back into the original jazz riff, man, with all those awesome chords beginning. It's like, it's got cool chords too, Ray. It's D minor 9 with a B flat at 11, I think.
Yeah, and yeah, that's what I got.
It's 2 at 11. But it's a chromatic thing. Oh, dude, you're gonna have to school me like Professor does on facts with the guitar part.
Well, I got the wiki facts on it, so I don't know. But
you could probably play the shit out of it. It goes back to the last verse. You know, I got to admit, when Roger starts singing, right? And I'm a little bit confused. Yeah. And that's so fucking cool, man. I love that part. And then he goes, those cool chords again. Those are awesome words. You know, no one has a real friend. That part is awesome. Mm-hmm. And then another fucking awesome solo, because David Gilmour is a god.
And each one's so different, right?
Man, he's able to do it. Yeah. We don't have, we said, like, Zappa could make, you know, a blues solo last 8 minutes and stuff. He can take a blues box and just milk it for everything it has. You know, because of his bends. Oh, geez, and I love him so much. I've always had. It goes into another call and response, and then it goes to this. The best part of the song for me is the ending of it, when he has those, you know, it's talking about, in my mind, a dog, you know, who's only a stranger at home, dragged down by the stone. That part, especially that part when he goes, who was breaking away? And then you have it, you know, round, he goes, and breaking away, who was only a stranger?
You
know,
I love that part.
Oh, me dude. Too. It's really good.
The 11th question.
Yep. Chills me, man.
Yeah.
I love that so much. And if I were, you know, when I want to say, hey, you don't, somebody come to me and say, hey, you don't like Pink Floyd, I would play him that part of a song, just that part, and say, okay, if you don't like that, then you're dead to me.
Yeah. Lay it down, man.
But I love him, man. I love his song, of course, and that's all I have, man.
Shannon, what do you think?
These two parts, I kind of call them like movements, if you will. This is my favorite part of the album. I think these songs are awesome. And I should not have said songs, but they are kind of grouped together because it's two parts of a story. I love the acoustic intro and with the trippy organ, and it builds into that quickening pace with like a dog moving through the streets. And when I was listening to it, you know, for once, I'm really interested in this album because I think the lyrics are incredibly profound, and it is about a social movement. I thought it might have been about the politician who was getting paranoid about pushing a false agenda, and his conscience was getting to him. But what I actually think it might be about is that he's a dog working. He's an outlier. He's like a spy of sorts, and he's getting paranoid about people, you know, finding out that he's probably working on behalf of the sheep. And so I just, you know, I love the way that, you know, the words go with it, and it works so well with the music, like you both had mentioned. And it sounds desperate, and it's very melodic. It's, you know, it's got a powerful bass line, you know, with that lingering, like, electric accompaniment there. And then you've got that quick guitar solo, which you guys had touched on, and it moves into, like, that marching sound. He's like, I got to get my thoughts, I got to get myself together, I got to pull it together, look like I'm part of this group and actually not working for somebody else. And then it goes in, you know, it kind of, I don't know if it's like an acceptance or what he wants, but it goes into this electric solo, and it's my favorite part of the song. It just kind of, it's like a, I can't even do it because I'll screw it up, but it's like two parts of a guitar, and it just goes, and
yeah, it just yes. like, oh yeah, that, I love that. That
I
shit out of
love that. That. It is so cool how it completely transforms the song, and you kind of get like this little like reprieve. In my mind, that's what he's feeling like. I want to be part of something else. And it's like almost like angsty, and it's just beautiful. And then, you know, it goes so that, you know, you have that solo, which is almost like some sort of like an intermission, if you will, because I think that's what he longs for. And then it, transforms into the ending of the movement. You know, you get the dogs, you know, barking, howling, and the whistling, which I picked up too. And I thought that was really, really, I thought that was pretty witty. I really liked that.
Yeah, it's clever, right?
It was really clever. So then after all, you know, the barking and the howling, we get into the conclusion. It enters into that beautiful, you know, signature Gilmour solo. And with the keyboards, really cool. The powerful vocals come back, and it's very dystopian. trying to break the part about the breaking away. I can't remember if that's part of the part one or part two or whatever, but he can, you know, find himself just slipping through the ranks, and he's feeling like he's going to be left behind somehow in this entire thing. He's going to be found out and his life is going to be over. And that's how I interpreted the lyrics, at least. And then it kind of circles back around. You get that trippy, it's like a trippy ending with the last vocal being Stone. And all of a sudden, Stone is just being repeated on a loop over and over again through the rest of the thing. In fact, it fades out at times. And it's so really cool.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
it's almost like a bass line in its own respect. And it's just Stone, Stone. And you can just hear it going. And the dogs are barking. And then that's where the whistling was. And then it circles back into the part one, and it kind of repeats. It even does that really cool solo again, which I was very happy about because that is my favorite. Musically, that's my favorite part of the song. And it kind of concludes with this like depressing eulogy of sorts. At least that's how I found it in my mind.
Yeah, it's like again, a eulogy, right?
Like a eulogy because he slipped away and he's like, this is how my life is going to end because – once again, he'll be caught. He'll be found out. He won't be able to work for the cause ultimately, even though he's doing it now, and he's just depressed.
Ray Z.
Well, kind of what Sam was saying. The chord progression is friggin' awesome. I love the rhythm playing in that first part of the song. Now, Sam, from what I gathered from my wiki notes, the chord, they say that you had it right. They have a D minor 9. Of course, who knows? I mean, this could be done like any tablature transcription. Some guy who like has a piano probably listened to this and probably wrote them out. We don't even know if they're right. But he has D minor 9 followed by E flat, major 7, sus 2, starting with the B flat, then A sus 2, sus 4, and A flat, sus 2, sharp 11. All like really outer jazzy chords. I mean, this isn't like the mother 1-4-5 chord progression at all. And
you could write those chords differently too, because if you add 11, you know, yeah, I got you. I see what you mean.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
But
I know what you mean. Go ahead.
You got those is it farfisa? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, I don't know. Farfisa, whatever.
You got those cool farfisa drones.
Farfanugan.
Those cool farfanugan drones. Yeah. Very nice.
Fucking groovy.
Organ swellings. lyrically, this kind of almost reminds me of like a companion piece to Murder by Numbers by the Police. And that's like a kind of that advice giving, like what you have to do to get through. And I always loved that song too. Mm-hmm. So that's what I kind of got from this. And this is the section I call the A1 section. Gilmore's solos are awesome in this part. I mean, he can actually play some really jazzy stuff. I mean, he's not just doing like, okay, here's me playing on eighth notes on the second and fourth beat. He actually plays around with the time of his phrases and stuff like that, which I think is totally awesome. It's like a new level of Gilmore.
And he's very clean. I like that about him.
Yeah, oh, definitely. I think he's playing a Telecaster on this one. I always think of playing a Strat, but...
He has his own guitar anyway with Fender, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's a Strat.
Oh, it is?
It's a Strat. Okay.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he plays Tellys all the time. He used to play exclusively a Telly back during when he entered the band in Saucer Full of Secrets days. But yeah,
oh, no kidding.
Yeah, he plays Tellys all the time.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. That's another reason for me to buy a Telly one of these days. One of many.
I have a Telly and buy it. Trust me, just buy it.
All right, sweet. Another part about the guy going down south dying of cancer, I thought that was after you go through all the stuff that this guy is doing and then like, yeah, this is, you know.
That's how he's picturing his life ending,
yeah.
Because he's going to be caught, you know, because he's working for a different cause. He's supposed to be keeping the ranks in line,
yep,
by working for the pigs.
Ah.
And he's foreseeing how his future is really going to end up because he will be caught. He's paranoid through the entire second part. It's crazy. And then it ends with that eulogy. It's crazy.
That is nuts. That is nuts. But yeah, that definitely, I like dour, depressing shit. So that definitely was right up my alley. Okay, the A2 section, that's the part where we got that double lead. And I think somebody touched upon it earlier, but there's that weird kind of call and response. Oh, so like two dogs answering one dog in the distance, which I think is really pretty spot on. After the dog bark section, you get Rick Wright's Fender Rhodes playing. All right, I think I'm assuming it's a Fender Rhodes, but it's a really nice touch. Pretty standard Dave Gilmore solo. They're always pretty awesome. Always plays the right note at the right time. I had a guitar teacher who said that like the secret to David Gilmore is he's always playing like the chord tones. And I've never tested that out, but makes kind of sense. Rick Wright may not have written on most of the album. Supposedly he didn't. But I think he saves it a lot of ways, and he was like their real secret weapon.
He does.
He added a dimension to this band that like
He's the entire atmosphere in this.
Oh, yeah. If you take Rick Wright out of the equation, then you got a pretty good British blues rock band, you know, with some intellectual lyrics.
Really depressed.
Yeah, yeah. But,
angry.
But then you add Rick Wright stuff on there. Holy crap cakes. It's just aces. Then we go back to the A1 section again, like I like to call it. And Waters' vocals are good. They're not as compelling as David Gilmour's vocals are, but, you know, it's not a clinker by any means. And they got that weird chromatic flourish. It reminds you of, like, some of the weird Steve Vai effects on Passion and Warfare. It sounds like one of those electro-harmonics Ibanez Gem tricks. Then we got that nice return to the A2 section. And then they come out of nowhere with the ending part. I just like the way it kind of breaks up instead of just, like, repeating the cycles over and over again with that was dragged down by a stone. I like that. So that's my synopsis of this song, which I probably could have spent a lot more time.
there's a real arc to the song.
Yeah.
There is.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And the lyrics work beautifully with the music. It's really cool the way that it was formulated.
How it starts off, like I said, with kind of being this is how you do this life. You gotta be trusted by the people that you lie to.
That's right.
So you can slip the knife in, and then there's that real energetic guitar solo. And then it comes up with, again, with the cost of what this life is going to be. You're going to die alone of cancer. And how it goes into that real mournful, almost funeral dirge, kind of real sparse and atmospheric. Just, and it kind of comes like the protagonist of the song is kind of letting this all sink in. Like, this is even Roger letting it sink in, because he said he's a dog. And then going into how it picks back up, because there's that part that you were talking about with the synth and the guitar on that solo, how they were playing and doing the call and response. To me, that's like a coming to a rationalization, coming to something that you've learned a hard truth, and now you have to cope with it. You have to try to be able to live with it. And musically, that's what it seems like they're doing. And then it has that really harsh solo again, where the protagonist kind of hits clarity. And that's when it comes up with, when you lose control, then you reap what you've sown, but the bad blood slows and turns to stone. And then how the stone keeps going, being dragged bomb by the stone. What is the stone?
The stone shows
up a couple times in this.
Stone.
It does. I think it's the choice he has to live with.
Well,
because he's got to do his part. He's working for a separate cause. And he's paranoid, and he knows he's going to get caught. So I think that is like a proverbial stone.
Here's what I think the stone means.
Number nine?
Yeah, kind of.
Number nine?
So it goes back into what you said about Animal Farm. Now, Animal Farm was about George Orwell's view of communism.
Yes.
And this is what Roger took. He took the same premise, but he turned it towards capitalism.
Yes.
What's the stone? Trying to get ahead. What's this album? What's this song really trying to say? You got to be a stranger at home. You got to work. You got to sleep on your toes. You got to be ready. You got to constantly work, and you just got to screw people over because you're going to get ahead.
That's the cause that he is working for, but I don't think he wants to. I think he is. He's secretly working for the sheep on their behalf.
I think it's just kind of like the rat race. It's the rat race, because at this time, this is when England was in a really bad recession.
Absolutely. This is, you know, we're talking about Thatcherism and all that stuff. That's all in full swing. You've got the parties, you know, battling it out. It had to have been incredibly difficult.
Yes. And it just, this was, that's why I say it kind of comes into capitalism, because
it
has that like I said, that stone keeps going over, then the synthesizer comes in really
clear. Stone.
And it's so cool.
Stone.
Yes. Stone. But you know, it's so cool. Stone. And it's true. And it even fades out at times, but it's still there. Almost like, you know, like that phantom pain.
Yeah,
it's still there. It's underlying. It's there. And then it comes back at times. You know how like pain does that? It does. It recedes and then it comes back, but it's still the same pain.
Well, then how Roger comes in with the, you got to admit, it seems like he's trying to change. It seems like he realizes what he's doing and he's trying to change.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a musical awakening, kind of.
Right.
And then it goes into that excellent double track guitar solo. And then those 11 questions come up, where it's, who was the one that was breaking through the chains, who was breaking from the path, you know, all whatever those things are. And it just kind of comes up as a, this is what I am. I'm a dog. And how, why?
Yes, that's kind of what
leaves it to me. So
I love how you're, because you have like the actual facts about like what he was, you know, he's taking two different concepts and combining them. I'm really thinking of it straight out as a political thing, like as a story about politics. You've got the back, you know, the story of like what was really going on with him personally and his relationships and whatnot. It's so interesting to see how he wove them together.
He is one unhappy motherfucker.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, and it's brilliant. Pissed. It's a brilliantly written song. It's just great.
I don't know why all the smart people that write all these great songs are so unhappy.
Every one of them, right? Lennon, fucking Maynard's Lennon. An asshole.
Sure.
Chris Robinson.
Yeah, I was just going to bring up Chris Robinson, yeah.
Great musicians and deep thinkers and but they're just assholes.
And it's true. I mean, yeah, everybody's got an asshole-ish side, and I can agree with that as well. But, you know, when you think about any artist in any field, they're usually tortured souls. And what they're doing is they're basically putting themselves, it's like their release. They're putting how they're feeling into art. And it is, it's profound stuff. I mean, right, you know, when you think about like Steinbeck or even, you know, even Orwell, this is a dark story. And I know there's just so many artists throughout history that do the same type of pattern. It's really interesting.
All right, dogs. This is a long-ass track, as we've been saying, over 17 minutes. And like all the long tracks on the album, there are parts of it I really like and parts I don't care for. Fades in on that acoustic guitar, and it builds with various organ and synth lines, as well as subtle electric guitar that leads to the first guitar solo. And I now understand why David Gilmour fans fawn over the man. He makes impeccable note choices, like you were saying,
Ray. Oh, he's right on spot.
And he just plays to the groove and the atmosphere of the song without needing to utilize flashy tricks. Nick Mason plays a little syncopated drum pattern underneath the solo, and it sounds cool. Shannon, I love that harmonized bendy guitar hook David plays.
That's my favorite.
Yeah, and that leads to that excellent second solo, and the tempo slows down. Now, the middle keyboard heavy section has all kinds of synth atmospherics and interweaving lines, and I fully recognize it's a major component of the Pink Floyd sound, and I don't hate it, but it just goes on a little bit too long for me, and there are times when I listen to Richard Wright's playing, and it kind of bores me a little bit. Synth squiggles for synth squiggle's sake doesn't interest me. Give me more Gilmour guitar. When the acoustic strumming returns, I welcome it. The third guitar solo, as well as the return of the busy drums, is a lot more dramatic, a lot more aggressive, and the harmonized ending of it is cool as shit. And the guitar hook returns. Shannon, go ahead. Do it.
What am I doing? Oh, woo-noo.
Yes.
That sounded nothing like it.
Nothing like it. You put me on the spot. Do you know what I like so much about that too is the way that it drops on. It goes doo, 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 doo. I can't even do it right now. It's so.
Sorry.
So that returns back to herald the final section, which ups the dynamic intensity as the drums take over and Nick gets to show off with multiple fills as the song reaches its climax. Lyrically, the dogs are ruthless, cutthroat businessmen who present themselves with smiles and handshakes, but then will do whatever it takes to get ahead in business, not caring about who they step on or harm along the way, competing against each other, and not giving a rat's ass about anyone but themselves. Another thing I have discovered as I have come around to Pink Floyd is how much I appreciate Roger's lyrics, and he even shows some sympathy for the dogs. In a lot of ways, they've been trained and conditioned to be the way they are by the ones above them, and they end up ground down and empty, sad, alone, and bitter. And this makes perfect sense now because he identifies as a dog. Now I see what that's all about. David sings the first half of the track, and Roger takes the last half. To my ears, neither of these singers are going to give like Freddie Mercury a run for his money, but they're competent and they communicate the feel effectively. They're not wooden. The track has dogs barking and whistling sound effects and all kinds of studio tricks and effects that the Floyd was known for, all adding to the feel of the tune. This is complex, challenging music, and it's my favorite track on the album, and overall, I think it's really excellent. So let's flip the imaginary record over and drop the imaginary needle on Pigs, three different ones, written by Roger Waters. Ray P., what do you say?
Okay, like I said, from Dogs, the how and the why. Pigs, three different ones. That organ and the bass, it's really kind of menacing how it starts off the song with the slashing guitar and that brutality that's kind of unrelenting. It just brought me right. Every time I listen to this, I keep going back to when I saw this at the Desert Trip, how this was the best part of the show, where he had redone the Battersea Station power station, and it kept changing colors. God, they're such a good act in concert. But the big man, pig man, to me, it's a business tycoon. Ultra conservative, very much so, because every time, especially at this time in England, business, they were just starting to denationalize all of their industries. British Airways, British Rail, British Telecom, they were all owned and operated by the government. And
British Petroleum.
Yeah, that was all by the government, and they were starting to privatize everything. Mm-hmm. And they were saying that they were doing it to help the economy, to help the nation, when really it was just kind of lining their own pockets and having their own power, and then having a lot more political power with that. That's what I think the first part is. That's the first pig. And the second pig would be the bus stop rat bag. It's politicians. Everybody thinks it's supposed to be directed squarely at Margaret Thatcher, although they never said anything about it, but it sure sounds like it's her.
Sure does.
Mm-hmm. Right after that comes in with a really good musical interlude with Resplete with Talkbox, making pig noises. Musically, to me, that always kind of seems like how business and politics kind of drive each other and mingle.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to give a big historic word, hegemony. The why people act the way that they act. What is the social contract that we buy into? That's hegemony. That's, you know, why you go to work. Why do you have to go to work in the morning? Why do you do this? Why can't you be free? That's kind of what that builds that. This is where he would be the building blocks of the hegemony of the culture. And then coming up with Hey You White House, which everybody always thought that was about the White House, but no. It's actually about Mary White House.
Mary White House, yeah.
Who was the moral defender. She's basically England's answer to Anita Bryant, but worse. The best part of this song to me, though, is that solo that Gilmore plays on the outro. That is just tits.
Word.
Now that's what I get off of this song.
Sam.
Oh, man. This song has every element of a song that I love. It's got cowbell.
I got from it too.
305, it's got some cowbell in there. Anyways, let's start at the beginning. Starts off with a pig noise, right? And a little keyboard riff that's really cool. And you know, it's kind of just minor keyed. And then this bass solo, I learned how to play when I was 15. And I figured it out, and I played it a few times. And I called my dad, Marine. And then I played it for him, and it had the biggest smile on his face, at least that year. You know, I'd made him proud before and after, but that time, he was proud that I played a Pink Floyd song.
You just went to the top of the well, Sam, with that one.
Yeah, man. Oh, dude. I played it a little bit, you know, do-do-do-do-do-do. You know, it was really easy, but at the time, you know, I had done something, you know, and I was very proud of myself, and he was proud of me, too, and I could tell. And so that was really cool. But then, you know, the rest of the song... This is a very popular song, by the way. South Park has made reference to this song by going, "Ha ha, so right you are, Aaron." Everyone knows this song. That's a Pink Floyd song. It's got great lyrics. I guess the best way I could describe it off the top of my head would be like early Nine Inch Nails. It's got some industrial things in this whole album, actually. It's got like industrial rock or metal elements in it. You can hear these things going off, you know.
You can hear where Tool came from.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, Tool loves Pink Floyd. Then it comes to, after the first verse, you know, it's got this cool, I call it like a Cheshire Cat effect on his voice. You know, it's got to spare the evil tie, keep it all on the inside. That part. Mm-hmm. And it's got the cowbell. When the cowbell comes in about 305, that part right there, man, that's just so tight. And I love it. It goes back into another refrain. It's got, the lyrics are awesome, man. This verse has the "you fucked up old hack." And any teenage kid, it's like, hears that voice, just want to raise his fist in the air. Say, "You,
yeah!
Ha ha, Sherrod, you are.
Keep cool, my mom's coming.
Yeah. Fucked up old hag. Sorry. Oh, it's Mother's Day, damn. Oh, She would laugh. Right. She would laugh. But those lyrics, you know, they're trying to say something to someone, and I didn't, you know when I was 15 the politics of it all. But when he's like saying these lyrics, like, you know what, you think you're a badass, but you're going down. One of these days, it's gonna be bad for you, right? This is kind of like the gist of the words. You know, 4:15 in the song, he just really cool bendy solo that David Gilmour does the best of anyone ever. Four or five notes that he bends the shit out of and milks it, and he's the king of that, man. No one else can really kind of do it like he does. And he's not flashy at all. He's kind of slow, and he'll tell you. He's in interviews about him playing. He's like, well, I just don't play fast because I can't. So I play like this, and this is what you hear. And he's really humble and, you know, all shucks about it in a Cambridge way. Then he gets into a sort of part that I know Aaron loves as part of the song. But if anybody's going to have a talk box solo, I think David Gilmour's earned his right to play the fucking talk box. And you just kind of maybe just listen to David Gilmour's notes instead of the fact that he's playing a talk box. He probably made it himself in his lab. And then it's like, okay, these guys are going to freak out after this, even though I stole it from Joe Walsh. I'm going to know this. In 1976. You're not going to know that Joe Walsh played it in 1974.
Yeah, Aaron.
But anyways, I defend the talk box, especially if David Gilmour's playing it. Even with a talk box, you know, he's able to get these, like, pig sounds. He's doing this little pick scrape and with a talk box, and he's going, rah, 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 you know. That's cool, man. Joe Walsh didn't do that shit. How come Joe Walsh is the king of the talk box? Better than Richie Sambora.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Jeez.
This song is one of my favorite solos, and the bass is holding it down there at the end, man. I love that part. And Roger Waters, you know, he's not the best bass player in the world. For that matter, David Gilmour isn't either. But Roger Waters knows when to just to hold it down and to stay tight. And him and Nick Mason do that, and they know when to do it. Kind of like Fleetwood Mac, you know? They know when to just tighten it up and just stay here in the pocket and let them do their thing, whether it be Richard Wright or David Gilmour. And they do that very well. And I love this song. Go ahead.
Shannon.
Yes. this song, to me, right out the gate, is Have a Cigar. It's basically rehashed with a couple of different points. I like this song very much, by the way, mostly for its lyrics, but there are a couple of really, really neat, really unique points to it musically for it. One is the cowbell. All I can picture is Will Ferrell there having his, you know, time of his life with the pigs oinking. So the pigs, the words are brilliant. This is what the song's about in my mind. We're talking, this song lays out who the pigs really are. These are like the people who are in charge of everything, from your businesses to your politics to everything. This is how the machine, you know, basically works.
Yeah, the ones who are actually pulling the strings.
They're the pulling the strings. The dogs are your basically like upper working class, in my opinion, especially the dog that was referenced in the last two movements and who's really not feeling good about the way things are changing. But he doesn't want to like lose out. He doesn't want to be poor. He doesn't want to be caught like thinking differently because he wants to, you know, have whatever he has. So anyway, going back around, the first being about like the CEOs of companies, that's the way that I interpreted that. The second, you guys were calling, yeah, that fucking hag. That fucking hag is the rich, wealthy heiress who inherited all the money. And basically she's, you know, throwing it at the politicians and, you know, companies and corporations, whatnot, to make sure that she's got a foothold. And whatever, you know, whatever goes on. I mean, she has to make sure she keeps everything as status quo in order for the money to keep lining her pockets. The third being the politician who is basically the worker, is like the face of the ones that have to convince everybody that everything's okay. So I thought that was really interesting the way that he laid that out so that we knew exactly who like the enemy was, so to speak, and which was referenced back in Pigs on the Wing. You know, the pigs are coming. This is them. They're finally here to make sure that everything is kept in line. I think that the ending has a really awesome guitar solo with that bass. Quickly, it kind of like crescendos and decrescendos. I don't know what that is that he's doing on the bass, but I really like it. And I think that's unique. I hope that's making sense. I don't know if you guys know what I'm talking about.
I think I do. I think I know what you're talking about.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, it's almost another solo.
Yeah,
actually. It is. Yeah. It is. But it's working like in accompaniment with that guitar solo, and it's really kind of cool. And then, you know, it kind of ends with the sheep in the meadow because we're going to be coming up on that part next. It's really cool the way that each part like lays out what's to come. It gives you that clue lyrically as well as musically. So I like this song. This would be probably my second favorite track here.
Ray Z?
Okay, Pigs, three different ones. The intro is kind of cool. It kind of reminds me of a certain section of Tubular Bells, which I've always been a big fan of. but the keyboard part. But like, and I can't pinpoint why, but I have this strong, visceral reaction to the vocal hook on this. I think it's the worst vocal hook ever. It just annoys the shit out of me with the ha ha charade you are thing. And it's like every time I hear it, I just like wanted to smash my neck into a car door repeatedly. And
it's so condescendingly British.
Yeah, I think it is.
It's so pretentious, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's like shut the fuck up. Stop. Somebody take the mic away from Roger. Give it back to Dave. He can actually make it. He can probably make it sound better. Or maybe it would be just as annoying if David Gilmour is saying it. I don't fucking know. But just for that, I'm gonna have to say this is
Ray's unimpressed musical pick.
Whoa.
But that's the part of the song that really dissuades me from it. Nick Mason's got the MVP on the cowbell part, and he went total Gene Frankel on this, which you got to give him credit for. And he would be doing himself a disservice if he didn't explore the space with the cowbell. Because last I checked, Pink Floyd didn't have a lot of songs with cowbell on it.
Pretty good, man.
Yeah, thanks.
You were like raised on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, definitely.
You make like 8 really obscure references every time. And they're all poignant and really they fit, but damn.
You know what, Ray? I'm much like you. I put my pants on one leg at a time. But when I do, I make gold records.
I make gold records.
Never mind. But give me that cowbell.
Yeah, man, we ought to listen to him, man. He really knows what he's talking about. I
know. He speaks for all of us, man. I like the musical interlude where I think it's Roger Waters playing rhythm guitar in the back. I think, isn't that?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that part's kind of cool. And as much as, like, I'm not a super huge fan of Talk Box, not to the same degree as Aaron is, but I'm generally, like, when people usually whip that out, I'm kind of like, eh. I think it is creative how they made it sound like pig noises in the back. And I'm glad that it was not just a construct in my head when pretty much my three predecessors said the exact same thing I did. So
pigs are working together. That's what you're listening to. They're having conversations behind closed doors, and you get glimpses.
Pigs are smart.
No,
yes, they are.
We got
they're brilliant. They are. They're considered a really smart animal.
They are. They really are.
Yeah.
And then this final ode to Arnold Ziffel. They got that disco bass line. In the end, I call it a disco bass line. I don't really know that it's a disco bass, but it just kind of like.
What does it sound like again?
Kunkle. Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, that's my take on pigs, three different and or ones.
Right, they're all one and the same, yeah.
Pig grunts, organ and synth noodles, and David's high bass notes start this one off. When the main section comes in, it's a hard-rocking mid-tempo groove that reminds me somewhat of Have a Cigar from Wish You Were Here. I think, Shannon, you said that. With Roger on rhythm guitar, and unlike you, Ray, I love the unholy frig out of Ha Ha Sherrod You Are.
You are wrong, sir. Dilly Dilly.
Love that vocal phrase. I've had that in my head all week. I can't get rid of it. It's the true hook of this song for me. Roger's voice is heavily processed during the second half of the stanza while we get a prominent element that I really like. Give me more cowbell, Nick, baby.
Sees Will Ferrell doing his like dance back and forth during this really serious song.
And his stomach coming out. Yeah.
With a pig, he's standing there with a pig in the pen. It's all.
uncomfortably close.
And I like the piano that Richard Wright plays on this. Like, it just all comes out of nowhere, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, it really adds a nice touch to the soundscape. And then, after the second stanza plays through, we get the requisite lengthy instrumental passage, and we are treated to David Gilmour's talk box. And not just some talk box casually thrown in, you know, like for effect, but the most egregiously excessive use of it I can ever remember hearing. Holy fuck, it torpedoes the song for me. They try to salvage it with a third stanza and some nice noisy soloing from David as the track slowly fades, and I do love that part, but the damage is done. Too bad, as the lyrics reference three pigs, people in high positions of power and wealth who control society and encourage the cutthroat competitiveness of the dogs. The first stanza supposedly references then-British Prime Minister James Callaghan. The second refers to Iron Lady Margaret Thatcher, leader of the British Conservative Party and eventual Prime Minister after Callaghan. And the third stanza directly states it's about morality campaigner Mary Whitehouse, who is a strong advocate for censorship on media platforms. It underlines Rogers' leftist socialist tendencies, and he seems to place much of the blame for society's ills on the pigs, but I digress. Ah, David Gilmour, I've gushed about your guitar playing so far, and then you deliberately try to piss me off and make this song
Aaron's Stinky Stinker.
I hear you, Dave. I hear you. The penultimate track is Sheep, written by Roger Waters. Ray P., your thoughts.
Okay. This is the song that they opened their 1978 tour on. But the sheep noises, how it starts with the organ and the little echo effect on it, with the building bass line behind it, really gives it a foreboding musical tension. It's an uneasy tension. It fits the song lyrics perfectly. That tension just builds and builds until the rolling bass line and that first verse with the aggressive guitar riff. I don't know how they did the song with Away, and he just stretched that last vowel out. It just goes into that echo effect with Away and Air and Real. The things are not what they seem. That no, this is no bad dream. And then here comes the stone again. Stone.
Yeah. Return of the stone.
Stone.
That guitar solo. The synth solo, this is just like a dark song. This has got to be Floyd's heaviest song. And then it goes into that the Lord is my shepherd with the vocoder. And I can't hear it, half the stuff. And then it sort of goes into some stupid resolution where the sheep rise up and kill the dogs. And it's kind of a version of the Who's Won't Get Fooled Again, Meet the New Boss, Same as the Old Boss kind of thing. If you want to grow old, do as you're told. Other than the resolution of this song, I love this song, but that last part makes no sense to me.
Sam?
I like the beginning of the song. The keyboard is kind of creating some tension. Richard Wright was a Doors fan, maybe. He's just doing his best man's Eric there. It's got a jazzy and slow, and kind of it's creating that tension like a rubber band. That shit pops into a driving pulse solo that I love, man. It's like dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. And if you don't want to drive faster, Dan, when you're listening to that song, then you're crazy.
You're absolutely right, sir. I get behind that statement
100%. Jesus Christ. He sings over that pulsing beat with the, you know, really cool, you know, lyrics, you know, high, and then it kind of fades into a synth thing. And I think what he's doing, Ray P., is that he's hitting the note, and then the synthesizer is doing a volume swell and then carrying that on out.
Oh, it just...
No one can sing that long.
It blends perfectly.
Yeah, it's great.
I can.
Yeah, they're doing all the shit with freaking, you know, analog shit, man. This is all in mid-70s. They didn't have digital anything, and it's really cool how they do that. the lyrics are killer, man. You know, like I said earlier, Waters' best trait is, I think, is his words. And these words are really, really cool, man. Especially how he bastardized the 23rd Psalm. Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie. Through green pastures, he leadeth me, the silent waters by. With bright knives, he relaxeth my soul. He maketh me to hang on hooks in high places. He converteth me to lamb cutlets. He hath great power, great hunger, quiet reflection, and great dedication. Master of the art of karate. Oh, we shall rise up, and then we will make the bugger's eyes water.
Yeah, I never get those last couple of lines. I can hear the other stuff.
It's the revolution. But
that's so funny to me. That's hilarious.
It's great, too.
He's using that Alan Parsons thing going on with the vocoder right there, I think, like in the rib. Okay. Until I learned the words, saw the words to that part of the song, you know, I was like, ah, shit, man, I don't have to listen to this shit. Really kidding. but then I read the words, and I was like, oh, that's so funny. That's like Monty Python, man. It's kind of snuck in there.
Yeah, that's a great and, comparison there.
And so it kind of, out of that, you know, it kind of builds back up into to an outro with Scott Gilmore doing like a descending riff, kind of like he does in Run Like Hell.
I love that.
Yeah, tempo. Me too.
Now, that's really cool. It's kind of actually, it's, you know, sounds like it may have switched keys into a major key because it's kind of happy at the end, which is, you know, maybe they're, you know, symbolize hope or something. I don't know, because the rest of the album is absolute darkness. You know, this guy is pissed off, you know, and maybe it ends on a good note on purpose.
I got a quote from Waters that he said at the time. He said, "Sheep was my sense of what was to come down in England, and it did with the riots in England in Brixton and Toxeth, and it will happen again. It will always happen. There are just too many of us in the world, and we treat each other badly. We get obsessed with things, and there aren't enough of the things, products, to go around. If we're persuaded it's important to have them, then we're nothing without them. And if they aren't enough of them to go around, the people that are without them are going to get angry. Content and discontent follow very closely with the rise and fall on the graph of the world, recession and expansion." He's too smart for his own good. What the hell is he doing in a band?
Yeah. Should have been an architect, right?
Shannon, what do you think?
This is a pretty cool tune. I mean, it's... you got that steady bass playing with some keyboards. It reminds me of Young Lust. I think it's Young Lust that I'm thinking of from The Wall. It's very reminiscent of that bass with the keyboards, the way that they composed that, the way that they actually played it and everything. I mean, it's interesting. And then it just kind of makes me think of that. Like that's the problem. This is the problem I have with Pink Floyd's music. I love their lyrics. I do like their music very much, but I feel like this is a band that's immensely talented that should have branched out all over the place. And they kept going back to very similar sounds and kind of tweaking them a bit to make it sound more original somehow. Like it's not connected to anything that they had done previously or that they're going to do down the road or whatever. So that's what my take is musically on it. But then it does turn into that weird, dark keyboard, like that just, I keep using dystopia, but it is dystopian. Life is deteriorating. People are becoming sheep. They're just not paying attention to what's happening around them. They're falling into despair. It's really bad. And they've got that, like that, you know, jangling guitars and the thrumming bass and it, you know, get the sheep in, you know, in the pasture and whatnot. And then, so, you know, it's time to have an uprising. You know, I'm tired of the pigs taking stuff from us, just letting us fall into rot. The dogs are working on their behalf to make sure it stays that way. And they finally rise up, and they're going to defeat the pigs.
All right. Ray Z.
All right, so Sheep. Rick Wright's got that electric piano Fender Rhodes playing in the beginning, which kind of adds like a really kind of gritty urban dimension. Like all of a sudden they're doing the background music for the movie Taxi Driver, or could be doing the music for the interlude on the show Taxi. Anyway, it makes me think of taxis. but and there's nothing wrong with that. I think this song could be an extension of One of These Days. It has that kind of that cosmic roadhouse kind of a thing, which I love the shit out of. And, like, One of These Days is another song that, like, if you're driving at night and you're doing the speed limit, then you're doing something definitely wrong. So I get what Sam was talking about on that for sure. I think the song is far superior to Pigs, three different ones. And for me, it makes up for it. there's supposedly there's a guy named Ian Peel, I guess. I know John Peel, but there's a guy named Ian Peel who said that this song sounded like the Doctor Who theme song, which I think is funny because I think that's why I liked.
Oh, it kind of does have that bass. Yeah.
Oh, it does. How come it does?
Which is the same. which is for me is funny because that's the same reason I like One of These Days. It like, always made me think like, you know, I'm driving at night in my TARDIS and this is my theme music.
That's awesome.
As I'm listening to it. The vocoder part, every time I hear it, like, I start to think they're going to start going to do, like, Love Bites by Def Leppard. So Def Leppard have totally destroyed vocoders for me.
Yeah.
But, because I hate that song. But, no, I like the song. And the outro chords are epic. They're just really cool. And Sam, sorry I mentioned that it sounds almost like Run Like Hell. And, yeah, there's like, a little bit of a glimmer of hope at the end of this piece.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Sheep's all right in my book, sir.
So we hear the sheep bleeding, then some organ noodling, and David is back playing that rolling bass line that kind of grounds the entire track. Then it abruptly shifts into a faster, insistent groove, Roger playing rhythm guitar and singing with a bit more urgency, drawing out the last syllable of each line. I think Ray P. mentioned that. Like most Pink Floyd tunes, there are so many layered synths and tape effects all over this thing. And I do love that guitar part. You know what I'm talking about? Leading into the What a Surprise section. Then, as usual, we get an extended middle section with synths and organs and mini Moog, and it sounds space-agey while Nick gets a couple of drum breakdowns. And then Roger gives us a sort of twist on the biblical Psalm 23 with his voice using a vocoder that's hard to make out what he's saying, even with headphones on. I had to actually look up the lyrics to see what he was actually saying. And they are pretty funny, Sam.
Yeah.
Then it's back to the last stanza, and finally a cool-as-fuck extended outro with some nice repeated echoey guitar licks, fading into chirping birds and more bleeding sheep. Lyrically, the sheep are the lower classes, the regular working folk kept under the heels of the dogs and control the pigs without even realizing it. They just follow along and do what they're told until things get really bad and the sheep suddenly get some clarity as to how things actually are. Then they rise up against their oppressors and begin the revolution, and it really kind of does make no sense, like Ray P. said. But then I get that they realize it's just a dream. They better stay home and do as they're told. The dogs are dead, but guess what? Just like Won't Get Fooled Again, like Ray P. said, the new boss will be the same as the old boss. Nothing really changes. Besides the middle section, which I find okay but a little too murky, this is another pretty good track.
You know, it's kind of what Sam was saying about the Ray Manzarek stuff. Like, I can definitely tell, like, Richard Wright had some jazz background, too. Like, you can kind of hear hints of it in Power Talk if you listen to, I think it's pronounced Power. It's like P-O-W-R-T-O-C-H, but it's on Piper at the Gates of Dawn. And he's definitely got some of those leanings.
Yeah.
And I wish they could have explored more of it.
Hmm. But. And that brings us to the final track, Pigs on the Wing Part 2, written by Roger Waters.
So I don't feel alone on the way to the stone. Now that I've found somewhere safe to bury my bone, and any fool knows a dog needs a home. A shelter from pigs on the wing.
Ray P., what do you say?
Well, here we go. Roger shares his view of the world and humanity with his wife, the dogs, which he admits he is one in this song, the pigs and the sheep. And this song just says how he can cope with this world because he loves her and because that is the only thing that he can hold on to, his love for her and her accepting who he is. Despite thinking everyone's a killer, he truly cares for her and she for him. His loneliness and the weight of the stone, he doesn't feel them with her, because she is his shelter from the threats in his blind spot. I like this song. I liked it even better when I found that A-track bridge with Snowy playing the solo between them, because it's actually one song that they split in half. So it's kind of like the Rainy Day Go Away or Dream Away Rainy Day from Hendrix.
Yeah.
I love that one when it's put together. I just, like I said, this is not a bookend to me. This is it's kind of like an expositional paper. The first song is the intro. This is what we're going to cover. And then we're going to go with over each subject that I said. And then we're going to end it with the conclusion. This is everything that we covered. And this is the conclusion.
All right. Sam.
You're up, Sam. Stone.
Man, to be honest, you know, this is, you know, the first song I learned how to play when I was that 15-year-old kid. I locked myself in the room because there was chaos outside my door. And just had to, this album helped me through some crazy times, you know, when you're a teenager. You know what I mean. All of you know what I mean. So this was the first song, though, that you learn how to play and then sing it to the girl that you like, you know, and so you combine parts one and two, and then you sing to them, and your super creative, acne, cracking voice, sing to this girl that was way out of your league, and you sing it to her, and then she never calls you again. That's how I feel about this song. This is my Aaron Stinky Stinker. You know, maybe it meant something to Roger Waters, but I like the other ones better. I don't like these two bookends. Okay, I'm done.
Shan, how about you?
The dogs are dead. We've come full circle, hoping for this wonderful ending that can never be realized, which is truly reality. I mean, it's how you always want the underdog to win, and it just doesn't happen in this case. I think it's pretty. Yeah, that's what I think about it. And I exit. Shannon out.
Ray Z.
Once again, we come back to Mother. And if anybody's ever read Stephen King's Revival, that's not a good thing. What Ray P. said, is like, as far as the essay, this is the conclusion. You take everything that you set out and you put it forth, and it comes to this. I would say that when I hear this, I think that sometimes when Roger's a good dog, they sometimes throw him a bone. And I like how that theme kind of comes back up again in the next album. But yeah, no, I like this. It's short, sweet, to the point, nice.
All right. Musically, it's a repeat of the opening track, and lyrically, it's kind of the mirror image of it. The dog's learned to care about someone, finds himself a home, is able to live contentedly away from the rat race and the pigs. Kind of offers a glimmer of hope that even in troubled times like these, we can find a way to be satisfied and fulfilled for ourselves. There's a note of optimism to it that most of the album sorely lacks. I read that Roger put these two songs as bookends so the record wouldn't seem so entirely dismal and downbeat. Again, I like the simplicity of it, and I like how it ends with the last sound effect that you hear before it fades out being the chirping birds, kind of happy and peaceful. Now that the track by track is completed, we'll go into our final thoughts and album ratings. For you new listeners, the rating is a 0 to 5 system, with 5 being a favorite album of ours, all the way down to a 0, which is worse than a talkbox solo. Professor Ray P., what are your final thoughts on Animals?
Well, my final thoughts on this one is just like when you hear a lot of musicians talk when they really started to listen to music, most people will say that Led Zeppelin was the first band that they really listened to everything that was going on in the music. I would say that was true with me with Led Zeppelin, but that actually went into Pink Floyd with me. So then this album is just so, I think this is a masterpiece, and it's, for me, it's so intellectually appealing. That's why I've always had trouble putting it into words about how I feel about this one. This one, to me, is a 4.75 because I'm not giving fives to anybody unless you're the Rolling Stones.
The man who sticks to his guns.
Yeah, that's it. But like I said, this is a masterpiece, and I see why it has grown a much higher in regard in the Pink Floyd realms.
Sam, what do you say?
Man, it's a 5. Simply because I couldn't be on a desert island and have a choice of albums and not pick this one. If I don't know, it had to be in the top 5, man. It really would. And it's part of me, man. And I'm proud that I learned how to play it. And, you know, some parts of it over the years have been like my favorite parts. And then some parts over the years, you know, get on my damn nerves, like Stone. Yeah, you know, over the years, you know, I'm going to do that when my wife goes on a rant the next time she does that. I'm going to start going, stone.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to have a black eye.
She won't get it.
Next day.
You're no, better man than I can get it.
I give this album a 5 because so there.
Right on, man.
Shannon, what do you say?
My final thoughts on Animals is I'd never heard this album before, probably in large part because I have a great appreciation for Pink Floyd, as Aaron knows, I mean, over the years. I just never delved into them that much. I probably didn't know any songs off of this because there was never one ever released.
Yeah, there's no single.
No, there's no single for it. So it doesn't surprise me that it stayed in, like, you know, kind of in a vault, so to speak, except amongst the real fans, the true fans. I really appreciate this pick because I do like this album very much. In fact, some of it I really like better than The Wall. I do. And this is a precursor to it. And I don't have the quote here where it's from, but I did read somewhere that Roger Waters said this is like, this album basically is the precursor to that. This is like, and you can hear it in many parts. It's interesting. I like Pink Floyd very much. My problem with them overall is that I feel like that they just could have expanded, and you hear it in bits and pieces in places, and it's just so beautiful. And I wish they had just stuck on a track like that throughout their entire time together. Who knows? Maybe they could have averted some of the fallout had they stayed creatively on top of their game at all times. I know that might sound really bad to the Pink Floyd fans out there. It's just that I think they had the potential to do so much more. I do like this album. I give it a 4. I love the fact that it's the part that really grabs me is the political side of it. That's the real big draw for me. I love the lyrics in this one.
Ray Z.
Love Pink Floyd. I do like this album. I like long songs. I mean, I could sit there and listen to Echoes over and over again. Stuff like that, I'm fine with. And even though I do have problems with the third track, still there's parts that can kind of make up for the vocal hook. But I'm going to have to go with 3.5. There's good stuff on here, and I could see it where what Shannon said, where it's kind of like the precursor to The Wall. But there's something about it that doesn't quite resonate with me, even though there's a lot of good parts to it. But it doesn't really like kind of draw me in. So I'm going to go with 3.5.
All right. By the time of Animals, Pink Floyd was one of the biggest bands in the world. Their previous two albums, Dark Side of the Moon and Wish You Were Here, were just monster-selling records. And the band had earned enough money to buy a building in North London that they converted into a recording studio. But behind the scenes, Pink Floyd was fracturing. Roger Waters was exerting more and more control over the creative direction of the band, and this led to conflicts, especially with David Gilmour, who was distracted at this time by the birth of his first child, while Richard Wright, who is often the mediator between the two, was having marital problems at home as well as having his own issues with Roger. Besides Dogs, which was a reworked song that David had a hand in writing, Animals was Roger's baby, written almost entirely by himself with a couple of recycled tracks and inspired by the 1945 George Orwell novel Animal Farm, and using animal species as metaphors for social classes. It was the first album Pink Floyd recorded at Britannia Row, and was the first album that Richard Wright had no writing credit on. The album cover was designed by famed English art design group Hypnosis, and is a photograph of Battersea Power Station with a floating pig in the sky, which was a 40-foot inflatable balloon that had gotten loose and flew over Heathrow Airport, resulting in panic and canceled flights.
And a drug test for the pilot that said there's a pig flying by. That's true.
I believe it.
I'll believe it when pigs fly.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's right. Yeah, to be honest, man, they did that shit on purpose. They totally did it on purpose.
Yeah. The album was a success when it was released, but divided critics at the time, and Richard Wright publicly stated he didn't like it. The tour for the album found the band members' relationships with each other straining considerably, and Roger grew more and more disdainful with the audience, culminating in an incident in Montreal where he spat on a fan, which would later inspire the band's next album, The Wall. Now, I have already stated that I'm not the biggest Pink Floyd fan, and I probably never will be. They aren't even in my top 50 favorite artists, and I only own 6 of their albums. But I can say that I have come to appreciate the band's music, and I can admit that I was wrong to dismiss this group for so long. It only took, what, 40 years to open up to them, and I can say unequivocally that I will continue to explore the Floyd's catalog. Though it's not my favorite album of theirs that I've heard so far, I like Animals. It has a lot of sonic elements I truly appreciate, and I like the scathing, populist lyrics that were a somewhat reaction to the punk scene exploding in England at the latter half of the 70s. I have become a big fan of David Gilmour's guitar playing, and he has some fantastic solos on this record, Talkbox notwithstanding. I give Animals a 3, and yes, Virginia, miracles do happen. Aaron likes Pink Floyd. Now, we've got to thank once again our sterling guest co-pilots for coming back to talk turkey about Pink Floyd. Professor Ray Permy, thanks for schooling us once again.
Thank you so much. Sterling, huh?
That's awesome. That's a good word.
Yeah.
I'm going to ride that silver shoe all the way to hell.
Oh, yeah.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
And super listener Sam George, you are always welcome here, my friend.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
All right. We've got an iTunes review.
Oh, yeah.
It's a 5-star review titled SRV, and it comes to us from Bingus 4213, and it says,
while always a fan of SRV's guitar work, I discovered him through his work with David Bowie and was not a huge fan of his albums, but did enjoy several songs. I own this album, but honestly didn't listen to the entire album. This show inspired me to download and give it another try. The hosts are intelligent and funny. The guest hosts give the audience a shot at glory. Great format. Stay for the chipmunks. Hey guys, how about some Dream Theater, Ride the Lightning, or Whitesnake? Slide it in.
Thank you for the review, and to everyone out there listening, we very much appreciate the iTunes reviews that help out the podcast. Please keep them coming and rock on. And that's going to do it for this episode. You can find this podcast at places like iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, TuneIn, Google Play, and Spotify. So if you like what you hear, please subscribe to the podcast and leave a review of it. If you take the time to do that, we'll read your review right here on the show. If you'd like to contact us directly, we can be reached at RidiculousRockRecords@gmail.com and also on the Ridiculous Rock Record Reviews Facebook page, where there's a link to hear each podcast, including the R4 Summit branch of the show. You can also recommend the show on Facebook if you'd prefer to do it that way. And yes, we'll read your Facebook recommendation on the podcast. You want to come on the podcast and talk about an album with us? Shoot us an email and we'll set it up. We're always looking for co-pilots to host the show with us, and we would also welcome any requests or suggestions for albums to cover. Feel free to leave all of your feedback, comments, reviews, and or suggestions at any of those places I just described. We'd love to hear from you. So for the R4 Summit, I'm Aaron.
I'm Shannon.
And I'm Ray.
Later.
Thank you.
I got a fever, and the only prescription is more stone. 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 Stone.
You went to Starbucks, huh?
Cumberland Farms, gotta let the low grade whiskey tango to Starbucks. I got Slim Jim too, waiting for me in the car, so.
Are you trying to dehydrate yourself?
Oh, you know it. I'd be a walking piece of beef jerky.
I can't talk anymore. But it's a really good album.
I look like that Snapchat filter where you look like a hot dog. This would be a Slim Jim.
I'm sorry, Aaron, I didn't mean to
check out of that one, so.
Okay.
Wow, that was awesome.
Sorry. Aaron, it's your turn.
It is? Oh, all right. Go! Aaron! Stone! Stone!
What is the stone? Shut the hell up so I can talk now! Stone! Stone! Stone, Shannon, stone!
Dogs. Cool tune. So let's flip the imaginary record over. And, oh, wait.
Come on, man.
Okay. Now, the middle keyboard heavy section has all kinds of synth atmospherics and into. Is Darth Vader on that podcast?
Damn it. Turn me down.
Vader, what do you think it does?
I can't go that far.
Keep away, man.
That's what I'm doing.
All right. I thought it was amazing.
I heard this the very first time we ever were on a podcast.
Yeah.
I was like, oh.
I heard it big time on the Zap one. I was like, ah, damn it.
Yeah, you'll hear it a few times on this one, too.
I like it.
Let's say it's asthma.
Yeah.
But, you know, corrupting the kids, right?
Fits in with the theme of the song, the darkness.
Not drinking wine.